Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In this episode, I welcome back Kat Etherington, the Director of Recovery at the Naked Truth Project. We explore the profound impact of betrayal trauma on wives and the journey towards healing and forgiveness. Kat explains the stages of healing, which are safety and stabilization, remembering and mourning, and finally, reconnection. She emphasizes the importance of forgiveness, not as a pressured obligation, but as a personal outcome of healing. We also discuss how friends and family can provide tangible support during this difficult time. For more information about Kat and her resources, visit nakedtruthproject.com. For additional resources, visit bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And please, friends, rate and review the podcast after listening because this really does help others to find it. Now let's turn to today's healing conversation with Kat. Well, all right, Kat Etherington, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jonathan. It's great to be here again.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to have you back on. We've had you on before, really. Actually, we had you on a couple of times before, I think. And we've talked a lot about relationship issues related to, okay, what do you do? How does a couple go through kind of the restoration process after there's been betrayal? We've talked from the wives' perspective. I really wanted us to especially focus this conversation around both the impact of what betrayal can cause in a wife, especially who has experienced that kind of trauma, and then move to how does that wife go through the process of forgiveness and what does that look like? And I really would love for us to take kind of a deep dive in that, kind of navigating all the emotional aspects of that. But before we get to that specific conversation, for maybe some of our newer listeners or those who are unfamiliar maybe with what you do, can you share a little bit about your ministry and kind of the work that you do?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. So I am the Director for Recovery with a UK-based but internationally operating organization. We're called Naked Truth Project. And really our mission is to open eyes and free lives from the damaging impacts of pornography and other related sexual behaviors. And we really do that in those two parts, opening eyes, which is about education and awareness and kind of starting conversations in places where that's necessary, and then freeing lives, which is our recovery work, which is where I oversee our team of counselors and coaches, offering group work and individual work with people who are seeking freedom, whether that's from their own problematic sexual behavior or from the consequences of betrayal in their relationships.
Yeah, it's great. We love the work you guys are doing. So let's dive in. Let's start from kind of the 30,000 foot view and just first of all, talk about what we are even dealing with when we're talking about betrayal and maybe specifically betrayal trauma. And then what kind of impact, broadly speaking, what kind of impact does that have on a wife?
Yeah. And thank you for starting at that view, because I think, although I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with that language of betrayal and betrayal trauma, some people come to this without really sharing that conceptualization of something like pornography constituting a betrayal. And so I think it is really important to talk about how that feels for the person on the receiving end of that. And, you know, betrayal is really about a breach of the relationship contract, that I had an expectation, or maybe we had an agreement that this was the scope and size and shape of our relationship. And now I'm discovering something else was happening, something usually secretive. And so the betrayal element of sexual betrayal is in the sexual behavior, of course, but it's also in that rupture of the relationship contract that, and often for Christian couples, that's a really explicitly stated contract, that we've had conversations about what's acceptable and not acceptable, where the boundaries are in our relationship. And so that breach of those and the secrets associated with that, and often some of the secretive behaviors and the behaviors that help people to keep a secret, that's where the betrayal element of this is. And when you read about the history of that term betrayal trauma, it's really about expectations of safety and trust within a relationship being shattered in a big, big way. And so when I think about that, I think about the hundreds of women that I've talked to who are discovering sometimes decades, certainly often years and years and years worth of secrets and lies and potentially gaslighting alongside those sexual behaviors. And so a trauma is the resulting wound from finding that out.
That's good. Now, this is obviously an enormous issue for a wife who has discovered in whatever way that there has been a betrayal in the relationship. And one of the things that comes to my mind is like, where do you even start? And the old phrase that says, you know, okay, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Yeah. But can you help us to understand, first of all, how do you even begin the process? How does a wife even begin the process of processing the betrayal? I mean, it can, yeah. I can only imagine, it just seems so enormous. Everything is sort of exploding in her mind and heart all at the same time. Help us to start to get a little bit of focus of where does she go first? What is kind of the first step of just dealing with the impact?
Yeah. And you're right. I think that description is a good one, in that the experience of trauma is not linear. And so it's really hard to sort of lay out this linear ideal of, well, you do this series of things and you'll feel better, because the trauma itself is like a shattering and a fragmenting of our sense of belonging, identity, safety in the world. And so it's kind of a multifaceted emotional, spiritual, physical, psychological experience that's unfolding. And so I don't think we can understate that, the impact of that. And we know that when you measure that against things like the criteria for PTSD, most women who experience chronic sexual betrayal would fit the criteria for that diagnosis. And so it's a big deal. It's like your whole world blows up. And so I guess in a way that metaphor is kind of helpful, because what you don't do when you attend the scene of a natural disaster or something where people are badly injured is start trying to perform surgery on the roadside. You don't do that. You kind of do that emergency medicine that would happen typically by the side of the road. And really, healing from betrayal is a bit like that, in the sense that in the beginning stages, you're dealing with a person who is likely in shock. And so there will be exhibiting signs of shock, disbelief, their body is reacting, they're feeling big feels that they don't know, they perhaps are not used to feeling, they don't know what to do with. Sometimes those feelings are driving behaviors that are out of character and feel kind of contrary to who a person is. And so there's just a lot of crazy in that first stage of kind of feeling like everything is, like you said, exploding. And so really the first stage of betrayal trauma healing is safety and stabilization. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try and get a hold of this thing. And we do a lot of psychoeducation in this stage. We do a lot of, you know, listening to podcasts like this and trying to kind of get a frame of reference for what is happening here. We do a lot of normalizing and validating and kind of sitting with the truth of what is happening in people's lives. And then we get to trying to create safety and trying to introduce emotional regulation and management techniques. So we're just trying to really put tools in people's hands that help them in those moments of, gosh, I feel totally out of my mind with anger. What can I do with that that doesn't result in me feeling worse about myself because I'm acting out in my own emotional dysregulation? So we're doing a lot of emotional regulation, a lot of boundary work, a lot of just trying to pull it in and just stabilize this thing. So I sometimes think about that, like, you know, putting pressure on a wound. We're not operating on the wound. Mm-hmm. We're not even doing stitches right away. We're just kind of trying to get some pressure on it, get it stabilized, and then maybe we can move into some of that more sort of treatment.
A lot of triage work just there at the beginning. So you mentioned, and I think it's very important to state this, that, yeah, this is not going to be a smooth linear process. And yet at the same time, you are using this word stage or stages. So can you talk to us about just what are the key sort of stages that are part of this entire response and maybe healing from a betrayal trauma, even though we know that's not going to be experience in a linear way?
Yeah, and it's super interesting, Jonathan, since I kind of started out in this field, there are so many more resources, so many more voices on this topic. And so I've actually read variations on what I'm about to say that have offered slightly more stages. But I am involved in the organization APSATS, the Association for Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists. I sit on their board, I deliver their clinical training, and we teach a three-stage model. Safety and stabilization being the first stage. Once you get safe and stable, you then typically are in a place where you can feel those slightly deeper feelings of loss. And so stage two is about remembering and mourning. It's about grieving the life that isn't the same anymore, and the future that doesn't look the same anymore, and the present that doesn't feel the same anymore. And so a lot of contextualizing, a lot of sense making, a lot of hopefully transformation through the process of grief and mourning that happens in stage two. And then stage three is that reconnection stage. And often this is where we talk about kind of rebuilding a sense of purpose and meaning in the world, reconnecting with relationships around us, whether that's the romantic relationship or other relationships, or spirituality is often one of the ways that people feel able to reconnect in stage three. And that's where we're really looking for that post-traumatic growth, which is that beauty from ashes kind of stage of the process.
Mm-hmm. Now, in this, especially, I think probably when you get to that maybe reconnecting stage, or maybe even a little bit before that, there is one aspect of this journey that every person has to come up against, and that is the issue of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Can you talk first of all about why that is not something that can be circumvented or optional in the process of healing from a betrayal trauma?
Yeah, so I think that's even an interesting question, because I think you would find different perspectives on that. You know, I definitely hear people in the trauma world talking about how forgiveness is an option and a choice. And I do think that trauma is a particularly powerless and choiceless experience. Typically, those are the characteristics of a trauma. And so one of the key principles of trauma recovery for me is power and choice. And so I do want my clients to be making an actively empowered choice about how they want to approach forgiveness, whether that's something they're interested in. And with that said, and with your listeners in mind, many of my clients are people of faith, and forgiveness is an important principle for them, and it is something that feels spiritually important. And of course, if they want to stay in the relationship, it's going to be relationally important. And so I'm always like super careful when I talk about forgiveness, because I know that it gets weaponized against women, and I know that sadly and men, I would guess, but my primary demographic is women with betrayal trauma. I know that they sometimes get kind of rushed into forgiveness and pressured into forgiveness. And actually the outcome of that is often what I call a faux forgiveness, where, you know, they want to forgive and they feel like they should. So they try their very best to, and maybe they profess that forgiveness, but the emotional processing that's needed for that hasn't really kind of caught up. And so my experience is that pressuring women to forgive does not actually lead to forgiveness, but, with all of that said, a lot of my clients are concerned about forgiveness and they do want to talk about that. And I think as a profession, we've been a little bit afraid to go there because of the sensitivities around that. And so I don't want to be not talking about something that's important to my clients. And so, yeah, that was a long intro to my answer to your question, but I think it's helpful in sort of setting the scene.
No, I agree with you, especially in the way that some of these things can be weaponized. There can be spiritual abuse issues that are going on around some of these kind of topics. And yet, I would still make the argument, and I know this may not be the right kind of thing said from the mouth of a man in this conversation, but I will say I have seen time and time again where when people choose not to forgive, that has a long-term detriment on their own soul and on their own heart and mind. So it's not as if we're talking even about relationship restoration here,
right?
And saying, because it's clear, obviously, right, that if you were going to restore the relationship, there has to be forgiveness. Otherwise, just bitterness is going to grow and grow and grow. And there's always going to be that rift in the relationship. But let's, for a moment, take the entire restoration of the relationship off the table completely and just focus on the person who has experienced the betrayal. And can we now talk about why forgiveness may be important just for them individually, not for anything about the relationship being restored?
Yeah. And I love that you said that, because actually that is usually where I would start with somebody, is just a very curious conversation around what is this whole concept of forgiveness that we're talking about? What does it mean for you? What do you understand that to mean? Where have you gotten that perspective from? And so obviously, depending on who your client is, you will hear all sorts of things. I hear a lot of people talking about scripture and, you know, their understanding of forgiveness coming from their faith. But I also hear a lot of people talking about how forgiveness has been modeled in their family of origin and what they therefore understand this concept of forgiveness to mean. And sometimes that's the most important place to start, because you're kind of unpacking, what are we talking about when we're talking about forgiveness? Because I think I know what forgiveness means for me, but you know, when somebody else is using that word, I don't always really fully understand that. But I think you're really onto something, which is that when we are unable to forgive, and my research kind of bears this out a little bit, that often that is a result of having been unable to heal. And so I know that there are people who would argue that kind of forgiveness is a pathway to healing. But actually my experience of working with clients and the research that I've done around the topic of forgiveness has really suggested to me that forgiveness is an outcome of healing. You know, for me, there's like a process that can lead to forgiveness, and almost they become interchangeable ideas, healed and forgiveness. And that's, like I said, that's kind of borne out in the research. So if we really want to heal, the proposition of forgiveness is kind of found at the end of that process. And so I suppose I'm not sure that people choose not to forgive. I don't hear that in my clients, but one of the words that came out in some of the research that I've spent some time kind of looking at this, and there was a really interesting piece of research that talked about the three major barriers to forgiveness. And the first barrier that they found in this pretty large study that they did was what they called unreadiness. And I really loved that language, because it wasn't talking about unwillingness. It wasn't saying like these people didn't want to forgive. It was saying that some people just aren't ready to forgive yet. And the way to overcome the barrier of unreadiness is to get ready. And you get ready to forgive by processing all of the feelings and all of the emotional fallout and all of the consequences of whatever the offense kind of committed against you was. So whether that was that you got robbed in the street, or you were the victim of sexual betrayal, or you know, whatever that thing that has happened to you, you have to fully process it in order to be able to forgive. So yeah, I'm not sure about unwillingness, but certainly people struggle with unreadiness.
Well, and maybe we need to take a little bit of a step back, because I love what you're saying about how many times forgiveness, if I can even put it this way, can almost become a little bit of like a natural outcome to healing. Because as you're going on that process of healing and you're realizing, hey, I'm starting to feel, it's all almost like my emotional sensitivities are returning. I'm getting stabilized. I'm getting clarity. And then it's like, okay, if I want to keep being set free from this weight of trauma and betrayal on me, then forgiveness comes out of that. But so maybe we need to take a step back and look a little bit more at what are some of the precursors in that healing that can lead to forgiveness. And one thing I want to have you address is maybe how vital, or what does it look like for a wife on this journey to grieve and mourn as part of that healing journey? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is vital, because what the research also shows is that people who have a tendency toward rumination, they replay the offense over and over and over again, are going to get stuck in that state of unreadiness to forgive. And so we have to move through the experience. We have to move through it, because if we don't, we cycle around it and we will stay there. And so rumination is part of the experience of trauma. It's characteristic of trauma, actually, that in our attempt to find safety, our nervous system reminds us of all the danger over and over and over again, because it's like, don't stand there, there's a snake, don't stand there, don't stand there, even when the snake is long, long gone. And so that's tricky to navigate, but it's impossible to reach readiness if we don't stop cycling and start moving. And for me, I sort of differentiate grief and mourning in the sense that I talk about grief is the feeling state. So we feel emotions of grief, but mourning is the process of moving through those feelings of grief. And so I kind of put it to my clients that we can choose to enter a process of mourning. And indeed, we really must enter a process of mourning in order to get out of that cycle of injustice and unfairness and what has been kind of committed against us. Because underneath that is really the grief, right? When I'm feeling like it's not fair that this happened to me, what I'm not kind of tapping into is it's unfair because now life is different and I've lost something, whether that's a tangible something, I've lost a relationship, I've lost, a house, or whether it's much more ambiguous than that. It's I've lost a dream, I've lost a sense of identity, I've lost a shared value system with my person. And so I think you do have to process that kind of mourning. And often we do that in lots of creative ways, and just kind of trying to make space for those feelings. And you'll know the difference between stage one and stage two, because trauma is all kind of up in your head. Trauma is like your brain is on fire, and it's like, wah! Whereas grief is deeper. Grief is down here in your guts. It's like the kind of depth of feeling. And so often that's helpful for people to learn to differentiate between trauma triggers and grief.
Yeah. That's really good. So another question I have is, because I think anytime, you used the metaphor earlier of kind of being on the battlefield, there's been a tragedy and, you've got this horrible disaster and you're not trying to do, delicate surgery on the side of the road. You're just trying to stop the bleeding. I think sometimes trauma, and especially this form of trauma, which is so tied to an intimate relationship, it can sometimes cause a person, rightfully so at first, to just pull everything in and become very, very focused on the pain.
Yeah.
So, which again, like you said at the beginning, it's rightfully so. Oh my goodness, I've got an artery that's bleeding out. Can somebody please stop the bleeding? How does this process, though, and why is this process of healing so important that a person not get stuck in that very hyper-focused self you know, focused, just looking at the pain element. Why is, or how does this whole process, including forgiveness, help the person kind of come back to a place where they engage the world around them? They realize that, you know, the sun still rises and sets, and just kind of that, not to, this is not meaning in a flippant way, but the idea that life can go on, like there is more to it than just this pain.
And that's super important. I love that you said that, because, and again, when I talk about that, I sometimes talk about like they're in the early stages of any traumatic experience. The trauma is like the headline. And so if you were looking at a newspaper of my life, it would say betrayal, trauma, pain, you know, that, and that makes sense because this is the big deal in my life right now. But what we're trying to do with trauma healing is exactly that. We're trying to contextualize this traumatic experience within the context of a bigger story, because in the beginning, trauma is the story. But actually, you know, eventually we want what is currently front page in every page to be a half page feature on page 7 that is contextualized within the bigger picture story of my life. And that takes work, because trauma will shrink your world. It will, and I think it's important to remember that, you know, there are narratives that come out of a traumatic experience that it changes our, fundamentally changes our perception of the world around us. And so if you're, I don't know, if you're involved in a car accident, suddenly things that have always felt safe and easy don't feel safe and easy anymore. And we understand that when it's something physical. But actually, betrayal trauma is particularly difficult for that, because it communicates the narratives that people can't be trusted, that I don't have good judgment, that I don't know what's going on around me, I'm not connected to reality, that I'm not who I thought I was, and that people aren't who I think they are. And they are deeply frightening things to be faced with. And if you don't heal them, you get to live there. You get to live in a world where you don't know what's going on around you, and where you can't be in trusting relationships. And that's not good for people. And it's not true. Typically, there are good people in the world, and you can rely on people, and you can trust people. And so that's kind of what we're looking to do with this whole recovery thing, is reconnect with the big picture truth of all of life, which is that bad things sometimes happen, but that doesn't mean the world is a bad place. And people hurt me, but that doesn't mean that I can never be connected in a relationship. And I think forgiveness, again, is kind of an outcome of that as well, that, you know, you have to do the work of examining your narratives and your beliefs around the world and the people in it and my relationship to it. And then you can reach a place of kind of being able to let go of some of that stuff. Because that's what we're trying to keep hold of, it, because it keeps us safe, Jonathan. You know, it's like, if I continue to believe that people aren't trustworthy, and if I refuse to or feel unready to forgive because of that, then maybe I'll be okay. And that can never happen to me before. So again, so forgiveness is a risk, right?
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, going back to the idea that, hey, this isn't linear, but there are stages to it. You know, some of what we're talking about now, this does come later on, right? It's not something that you don't start. This is why I think I roll my eyes when I hear well-meaning Christians come up to somebody who's literally just found out about like a loved one dying or something and going, well, all things work together for those who love God. You know, I'm like, poor timing. Hey, it's true, but it's terrible timing on that, right? So even this idea of getting to a place where, oh, I can see the flowers again. I can actually talk to my neighbors. I can have, like, I can trust this person that says they're going to do this thing for me. Well, day one of you dealing with betrayal trauma is not the moment to try to bring all of that message to them.
Right.
But as we kind of start to land the plane here, I wanted to ask one other question that I think is important, because not every single person that is listening or watching this podcast is maybe in the throes of a betrayal trauma right now, or is even needing exactly what we're talking about right now for themselves, but they're a friend or a family member of someone who is. How can friends and family really come around a wife, especially, who is experiencing this betrayal trauma, and provide, you know, really good kind of support and help? And why is it important that there be friends and family that are part of the support system?
Yeah, it really is important, because I think wives and partners often feel like the forgotten half of the couple, especially, and, you know, I love the church. My husband's church, a church leader, but sometimes the church is really uncomfortable with Friday and the Friday and Saturday of the Easter story, and we want to get to Sunday and sort of live in the resurrection. And so, you know, that's our temptation. And actually, a lot of the mistakes that people make when they're trying to support a betrayed wife come from their own sense of discomfort with the truth of their story. They come from a place of, gosh, I don't know exactly how to respond to you, or it feels scary to acknowledge that things happen like that to people. There's a really, really fantastic little video by a lady named Diane Langberg, who's a Christian psychologist. And she talks about, why do we do that thing that you were just saying? Why do we throw scripture verses at people? And usually it's because we have really good intentions, and we know that what we're trying to offer them is truth. And we know that if they could only just receive it, they would feel something more favorable. But she says they suffer from what she calls the splat effect. Like, it just splats off them. They just can't, they don't have a door to take in the love of God when the person who in that in, you know, the most important person who is the most supposed to embody that love to them has just shattered their life into a million pieces. And so one of the things that she said that I found both incredibly beautiful and incredibly challenging is when she talks about, she said, you know, she sat with somebody who had been deeply traumatized. It wasn't a betrayal situation. She worked with all sorts of other traumas. And she's praying and she's saying to God, why can't you just tell her? Why can't she just take it in? Why can't she just receive these truths that I'm trying to give to her? And she said the word that she heard from God was, if you want her to know that I love her, then you must go out and love her as I would. Mm. And I'm like, oh, okay, that feels like a really big job. And it's quite a scary proposition. But what a beautiful thing that this kind of idea of, it's really hard for us to understand an abstract concept when we're in the middle of a concrete experience. And so what we want to be doing when we're supporting partners is embodying and kind of incarnating an experience of love and care and support. Take them a casserole, take them a care package, take away some of those responsibilities. If someone you knew was in shock, what would you do? You'd cook for them. You'd go clean their house. You wouldn't try to fix it with a Bible verse in one fell swoop.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, where can our listeners and viewers go to just get more information about the services and programs and resources that you all provide?
Yeah, they can find us at nakedtruthproject.com, and they can learn all about our education and awareness work there. And they can find under the Get Help tab, they can find all of our resources for recovery as well.
Yeah. Well, Kat, this has been a great conversation. I love that you lean into this space. I think you've provided a lot of help and hope to a lot of women listening today. So thank you for being with us.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we want to help you take your next step towards wholeness in Christ. And so we're going to put all that information about Naked Truth Project into the show notes, as well as some other resources that can be helpful to you. But we are so glad you've been here, and we look forward to seeing you back again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.